This week, it was almost impossible to ignore the hashtag MeToo on social media. Prompted by the allegations against Harvey Weinstein, thousands of women and men are sharing their stories of sexual harassment and assault. To find out what people in Halifax make of the movement, the CBC's Felicia Latour hit the streets.
I did hear about it, and I did choose to participate. It broke my heart, all the different posts I've been reading. I mentioned that I didn't feel maybe like my experience is measured up, but I still felt it important to mention solidarity.
I haven't participated in it at all, but it was startling to see something like that that's an obvious problem brought to light in such a personal way. But I also wasn't sure the burden is on the victims of these instances to come forward in order to make people realize these things or something like that. And that's something that, you know, is already an obvious problem.
It was difficult to take part because it's something that's difficult to talk about. I've definitely experienced a lot of harassment, but what I've been reading compared to other girls, I felt like I was sort of lucky. Mm-hmm. Although the term lucky is pretty sad to use in this context, I think that shows how big the problem is.
It's funny because my girlfriend and I had a conversation about this last night. I think that this is it's really cool, empowering movement by a lot of women and men to kind of stand against it.
Do you think that social media campaigns like this can be effective?
It all starts with raising awareness, and I think that social media is arguably the best tool at raising awareness. Movements like these, which include hashtags not only with Me Too but also with We Hear You, shows that there is a position for people that haven't been directly affected by it, but they do have a part in this whole movement.
I guess awareness and opening it up for discourse is the first step. And I believe that people are good. And if they hear this and they see how widespread this is, action will result.
It's hard not to be cynical about it and say that there's already a lot of awareness and that hasn't really, like, how much has that done, you know? I mean, it's more conversations do seem to be happening, I guess, than my understanding of the past. Mm-hmm. But I'm not really sure if we've seen tangible changes made because of them.
And that was the CBC's Felicia Latour speaking to people in Halifax about the hashtag MeToo. In many cases, incidents of violence and harassment have taken place at work. Gail Gatchalian deals with cases like that, both as a workplace investigator and as a lawyer at Pink Larkin in Halifax.
Good morning, Ms. Gatchalian.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for coming in.
It's a pleasure.
What was your reaction to hearing the stories that we have heard over the last little while in this particular campaign?
I think my reaction was similar to that of many people, which was just overwhelmed with a sadness and disgust at what's happened. But I can't say that I was really surprised.
Do you expect to hear more of it?
Definitely. I think we're going to be seeing more employees asking about their legal options, knowing how prevalent sexual harassment and sexual violence is in our society and in the workplace.
What requirements are there under the law for companies to have either a stated or written policy about sexual harassment?
So if you look at both legislation that governs workplaces as well as decisions that come out of, for example, boards of inquiry under human rights legislation, the requirements are to broadly to have a workplace that is safe and free of discrimination and harassment, including sexual harassment. That includes having a policy dealing with sexual harassment, which has a clear complaint and investigation procedure, and for investigations to be done in a timely way and in a way that's competent and fair.
Is there a significant difference between the way in which that has to be pursued in a small workplace, a mom-and-pop's grocery store, as opposed to a large institution like a bank or the CBC, for that matter?
I think so. I think one issue in small workplaces is that often employees, and even in large workplaces, as we know from the Weinstein story, feel afraid of coming forward with their complaints of sexual harassment. So I think all workplaces need to both have a policy in place for complaints to be made, but also make it clear that if employees don't feel comfortable making those complaints and disclosing instances of harassment within the workplace, that there's someone external that they can go to disclose their complaint and talk about what they can do to get their complaint remedied.
And there's kind of two channels too. If in fact there's any kind of physical contact that comes under the heading of assault, the person to call might be your local police station, or the institution of contact with the police. in a case where there is harassment of a different kind of variety, it might be that you would go where?
Well, I think that sexual harassment in the workplace runs the gamut from verbal harassment all the way up to unwanted sexual touching. And so just because something might actually be a crime and might actually be the subject of charges doesn't mean that it can't and should also be addressed in the workplace. And so in those cases, even if there is a complaint to the police, even if there are charges, it doesn't absolve the employer from dealing with the workplace consequences of that sexual harassment. Harassment or assault.
But in some cases, the Human Rights Commission is also an option, is it not?
Absolutely. The Human Rights Commission is an option. Something that people often forget is that a lot of employees are covered by occupational health and safety legislation, both provincially and federally. And those statutes have provisions dealing with violence in the workplace, and there are some decisions which suggest that violence will be interpreted as including harassment, and so you can get an external investigator involved in cases like that, and you might also be able to refuse to work in unsafe conditions.
And there would be a third option would be a civil suit. In certain circumstances?
Yes, that's true. It's difficult, obviously, for an employee to commence a civil suit against an employer if that employee is still employed. So it's not really a viable option if that person wishes to continue to be employed. However, there are circumstances, for example, when the harassment or the abuse is so intolerable that an employee feels that they have no choice but to quit, and in which case they can pursue a civil suit for constructive dismissal, or if they have enough years of service with the employer and they're covered by labor standards legislation, either provincially or federally, they can make an unjust dismissal complaint.
You and I were discussing very briefly during the national newscast, 7 o'clock, a column by Zosia Belsky in the Globe and Mail yesterday. We owe sexual abuse survivors more than Me Too. One of the things that she points out is that strong unions have been helpful in this particular case. If you work in a union shop, you would have another option there that somebody who in a non-union shop might not have.
Absolutely. In a union shop, you have a union that you can go to. You have a grievance procedure. You have a protection from retaliation. I think what that comment demonstrates is that this epidemic of sexual harassment and violence, both in society and in the workplace, is a feature of power and power imbalances. And so the more power employees gain in a workplace, the less likely that these types of things will happen. But not everybody has the advantage of working in a unionized workplace.
And as this company has found out, you can have very strong unions with lots of strong women in leadership positions and still end up with an issue.
Absolutely, and I think that raises a good point, which is we can't just rely on complaint mechanisms to deal with this issue. There actually has to be proactive work done to change workplace culture, which we've seen in the Weinstein case actually contributed to and supported sexual harassment and violence in the workplace.
There's another component to this, which is what is the obligation of somebody who's in the workplace who sees harassment going on? Well, talk about that a little bit. What the obligations might be there.
Sure. So it's different if you're sort of part of the operating mind of the employer, right? If you are a director or a manager and you know or you ought to know that sexual harassment or violence is happening in the workplace, then you are taking on the obligation and potential liability for not addressing that problem and providing a safe workplace. If you're not a part of the directing mind, if you're another employee, there really is no obligation apart from an obligation that might be imposed by way of policy, for example. So I think that the way we get at that is, like I said, is addressing proactively the workplace culture that supports and sometimes enables workplace sexual harassment and violence. And one of the things I think employers really need to start thinking about more is training, not only around what is sexual harassment and sexual assault and how to deal with it, but something called bystander training.
Which is just what it says.
That's right. Yeah. It's training for employees, proactive training for employees that recognizes that changing workplace culture and eradicating sexual harassment and violence in the workplace is the responsibility of everyone in the organization.
Gail, thank you very much for coming in this morning.
It was my pleasure.
It was good to see you.
Thank you.
Gail Gatchalian is a workplace investigator and a lawyer at Pink Larkin in Halifax.